tasting our mouths. And awareness didn't come too soon, but you finally tasted it too.
This is Interlude, Break You Down in the Worst Way. Abandoned Vampire AU, written by Her Love Was a Joke and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13, is Jen, and is the 7th story in the Screaming Down the Starlit Sky universe. For additional content and warnings, please check out the introductory post on my live journal.
Jokes were about me. I got a feeling that my time was off. But baby, that's just not me. So as far as anyone can see, they'd be helpless not to agree.
Robert Breyer was old enough to remember the first few terrifying days after the decision was made to move to the cities. It was 1916, and staying in the countryside, where hysteria among the humans had translated into keeping a watchful eye on their population, and where a man of fighting age still at home brought unwanted attention, was simply not an option. Besides, with so many off to war, populations were dwindling. The humans themselves are flocking to the cities, to enlist, to find work, to beg. The move was really the only thing that made sense. Large cities were full of strangers, and it would be so very easy to assume a persona, to wear a uniform and fool them all. The uniform had changed over the years, from Allied soldier to arrogant aristocrat, but the effect was much the same. It came to Schechter in a dream, much the way most of his plans did. Robert hadn't really understood his grandsire's gift. Even now, there were few in his inner circle who really did. But he'd known enough not to question it. Loyalty to his grandsire went without saying, but there was something deeper than that in the way Robert had calmly accepted what would prove to be the biggest change in his new life. There was respect, of course, but also affection. Gratitude. Schechter had released Gabriel from his side, a huge gesture that even Robert's young vampire mind could comprehend. Simply so Gabriel could keep Robert for himself. That kind of certainty in Robert's character, his suitability, was powerful, and he would never forget the rush of determination he'd felt at that. He wouldn't let Schechter down, no matter what the future might bring. Even now, it was a promise he held close. The plan was solid, and no one could figure out why they'd never thought of it before. Years later, Breyer would wonder what exactly had prompted the sense of urgency in the older vampire's eyes. But he'd been so young at the time, so consumed with his own thirst and the budding talent he could just barely feel beneath his skin, that the thought had never occurred to him. He'd been such an oblivious fledgling. But Gabriel and Schechter had doted on him regardless, perhaps remembering their own youth, or maybe just because they'd loved him. He'd never put the question to them back then, and now they were so far removed from the events that it was hardly worth bringing up. It was decided early that they would have to separate, that it wasn't safe for them to remain together. The downside to living among so many humans, to staying in one spot and letting their food, their sport, come to them, was the added need for security and anonymity. The art of vampire hunting went far back, much farther than even Schechter could remember. And those select humans with the skill for the hunt were incredibly good at seeing the signs and following the trail. For that reason, vampire populations had to be managed, kept small. Otherwise, their presence would be far too easy to detect. Schechter had chosen one city, while Gabriel, and by extension Robert, had chosen another not far away. Not content to leave it at that, letters were sent, people were contacted, and eventually three others, all fledglings of Schechter's, had themselves made the move to cities of their own. There was Alfred to the west, with his loyal ally Nicholas, who'd taken over after Alfred quickly fell to one of the Aeros. There was an Asher to the south, a strong line whose leadership continued even to this day, though power had changed hands half a dozen times over the years. Tyson chose a city to the east, and had only recently been replaced by his fledgling Maya. Other vampires followed in the months and years after, some loyal to Schechter, some not. The latter were to be watched closely, allowed to congregate only so long as a sense of fear and a grudging respect would keep them in their place. The potential for danger was high, but so long as the ruling class in each city was tied together, it would be a manageable threat. Everything else could be dealt with in time, and there was something to be said for the illusion of freedom. He'd won his own freedom, true freedom, long ago. And though it had been decades since he'd been the fledgling Robert at Gabriel's side, Briar still knew his place in Dandy history. He'd seen it all come together, and to witness the birth of the Dandy Gang had been an awe-inspiring and humbling experience. It provided him with countless memories, stories both true and embellished, that he would one day pass on to his own fledgling, if he ever chose to keep one. Humans were notoriously difficult to care for. They came with their own problems and almost always had some sort of baggage to deal with. Newborn vampires were no less work. There were still times when he thought he might enjoy the challenge of bringing one to heel. There were some sweet fledglings in Gabriel's city, all wide-eyed wonder and eager questions. And he could see the appeal in that. He wasn't fixated on it, though. Wasn't so lonely that he was willing to take in whatever stray human had managed to catch his eye for a moment or two. No, he had high standards. Ones he'd thought would be impossible to meet. Courage and brashness in equal parts. A sharp mind capable of processing the situation and finding a fast, effective way out. The ability to take care of himself with no need for constant coddling. A lithe, compact body with surprising strength and grace. An incredible sense of self-preservation, but a love for those closest to him. The need to fight, even when the odds were against him, if only because his friends might find a means of escape. Long, dark lashes, fluttering up to expose blue, blue eyes, as ropes were tied in a gag secured in place. The fight going out of the boy as a sedative took hold, allowing him to be moved to the floor, just out of camera range. It was surprising how quickly Briar realized he'd been wrong. His criteria weren't impossible at all, because there they were, in a hunter of all people. Never let it be said that he took the easy road. Going home empty-handed had been frustrating, but necessary. Staying in Beckett's city after what they'd done would have been akin to signing their own death warrants, and taking the hunter with them would have only encouraged Peter to follow. No, they needed him to stay and play the role they'd created for him. He'd done it beautifully, unleashing his fury not on Beckett directly, but on his credibility. Not content with half-measures, Pete Wentz and his allies had murdered an envoy and attacked defenseless fledglings. They'd nearly killed one, right in front of his sire. While the loss of life was regrettable, Felix was, after all, connected to Briar by blood. It had been necessary in the end. Nothing sent a message quite like death. Although Briar himself was capable of much, much worse. They called him the Deimos, dread personified, and he'd done his best to earn the reputation. As best as he could tell, his talents lay somewhere between those of a telepath and an illusionist. He could search for thoughts and memories associated with an individual's deepest, darkest fear. And he could bring those things to the forefront, amplify them, all in the blink of an eye. He'd brought grown men to tears, had left a trail of broken minds in his wake. And he'd done it with a smile on his face and a song in his heart. Much the same as he planned to do with the hunter who'd been following him for the last 3 blocks. The human was good, Briar would give him that. He looked unobtrusive, nothing more than a frat boy who'd had too much to drink. He stumbled now and then, muttering quietly to himself. A stupid vampire might let his guard down, go in for the easy kill. But Briar was smarter than that. There were no bars in this area, and the nearest university was clear across town. The smell of alcohol was not strong enough to warrant such a dumbing down of human senses. Also, the sleeve of the boy's red sweatshirt bulged suspiciously near the cuff, more than likely concealing a stake. Bob rounded a corner and leaned against the lamppost, affecting a calm, relaxed pose with his hands in his pockets. It wasn't long before the human followed, nearly tripping on the uneven sidewalk. Briar allowed him to continue the charade for a few moments before shaking his head sadly. "It's true, you know," he began, watching the young man rock back and forth on the balls of his feet. The movement wasn't as off-balance as it was meant to seem. The vampire could see that the human had more weight placed on his left leg. He was ready to spring into action, dodge the inevitable attack, and strike out with the weapon in his sleeve. "What?" the hunter asked, turning slightly, trying to subtly get into position. "The devil's in the details." It all happened in the blink of an eye. Briar opened the connection between himself and the human, tearing through thoughts and memories, his talent immediately zeroing in on the relevant ones. There, he could see it, a reoccurring fear the hunter had had for years now, one shared by his family, his girlfriend, every time he returned after a night of chasing monsters. As far as fears went, it was pretty rational. And Briar was a little disappointed. He'd hoped for something more ridiculous, something he could laugh at later as he related to Gerard or Gabriel, something that would make Frank crack a smile after one of his horrifying nightmares. But no, this human had to be one of the more rational ones. With a sigh, Briar grabbed hold of the fear and pulled it to the forefront. He used it to spin the human's thoughts in circles, to make the real world bleed away, replaced with an illusion based on his deepest, darkest fear. Briar watched as the young man's eyes grew wide, terrified, as he watched a group of vampires burn his house, his girlfriend and their 2 children still inside. He fell to his knees on the sidewalk, the rough concrete ripping into his baggy jeans, and tore at his hair. His red baseball cap fell to the ground, rolling into the road. "Sarah!" the hunter screamed, holding his head and rocking back and forth on his knees. "Cameron! Jessica! Someone call the fire department!" "It's too late for that," Briar said softly. "The house has already burned down." It was easy to change the illusion, to morph the burning building into one that still smoldered, even after the fire had been put out. All of the walls had collapsed in on themselves, save for one. On it was a charred family photo, 4 smiling faces just barely visible beneath the soot and ash. The young man fell forward, pressing his forehead against the dirty ground, and let out the howl of a man who had nothing left to live for. Briar took pity on him after that, reaching out and snapping his neck, though it was more because he had places to be than because he was feeling particularly charitable. He checked his pocket watch as he stepped over the body. 11:54. He'd be late, but Schechter would more than likely understand. Briar could hardly have led the hunter right to their doorstep, could he? The Dandy safe house was located in the heart of the city. Briar didn't really care for traveling. He was content to stay in Gabriel City, harassing familiar hunters and walking familiar streets. But he did enjoy visiting new safe houses. No two were alike. Gabriel's was the top two floors of a grand hotel, Maya's the penthouse and lower floor of a luxurious condo. Beckett's, John's, Briar corrected with a smirk, an old manor on the outskirts of town. Schechter's was an apartment building in the middle of the city, not 20 feet from a human apartment complex. At least they never wanted for a meal, when one of them was unable to go far from home. Next to his own suite of rooms with Gabriel, Briar was most fond of his apartment. But then, he supposed that was understandable. There was something to be said for being connected by blood to most of the vampires in the house. Gabriel had adopted more than he'd sired over the years, and while Briar had found some incredible allies, they would never be as close to him as his siblings. One such sibling was sitting on the front steps of the safe house when Briar returned. Briar wasn't quite sure who he was, but knew it was one of several named Alex. It was rather confusing, as all but one were still at Schechter's side. It was difficult to distinguish one from another without using some physical characteristic. This fledgling had long hair, neatly pulled back at the nape of his neck, with a blue tie that matched the band on his hat. Briar wondered how long it had taken him to match them. The young were ridiculous, whether they were human or not. "I'll let him know you've returned," he said, getting quickly to his feet and nodding as Briar made his way up the stairs. He was a respectful one. Briar had to give him that. He looked forward to meeting him again, in a few decades' time, just to see how he'd turned out. He smiled at that a little, pausing to picture it for a moment, before continuing up the stairs. He'd gone 2 steps when the sound of a pained gasp and glass breaking stopped him in his tracks. He turned slowly toward the building across the street and caught sight of a boy on one of the ground floor balconies. The human gripped tightly to the small black phone pressed against his ear, and even from 20 feet away, Briar could see wet tracks running down his cheeks. "No!" he said in disbelief, shaking his head violently. A lock of shaggy brown hair fell into his wide, terrified eyes, and his teeth sunk into his bottom lip, dangerously close to the small gold ring pierced through the side. Briar couldn't hear the reply he received, but it sent the boy flying back into the apartment. He threw his phone down on the sofa and ran into the bedroom, throwing open the closet door and digging around inside. The vampire could see him through the open blinds as he frantically began throwing clothing into the bag, not even stopping to look at what he was grabbing. His fear was a palpable thing. It was so easy for Briar to open himself up to it. He was hit by the intensity of the images in the boy's head, the despair and fear. He was heartbroken by an old woman's passing, but that wasn't what interested the vampire. No, it was the waves of terror that had him paying such close attention. The boy was about to do something, go somewhere, and he feared. No, he was certain that he'd never get away again. The boy's thoughts were jumbled, never staying on one thing for more than a moment, but Briar was able to catch the image of fangs and fine, dandy dress. "That's hardly polite, Robert," Schechter said sharply as he made his way down the stairs. "That boy is here as my guest, and as such I've given my word that he is safe in my city." "That's all of his own doing," Robert said, taking care to keep his voice calm and even. It wouldn't do to let hurt feelings show. He was no longer a fledgling and should be able to handle censure without pouting, even if it was done in error. "He's projecting." Schechter was silent for a moment. Instead of offering an apology, he asked, "What is it?" "An old woman's been killed. someone dear to him, important enough for him to face his fears. Briar replied. He hadn't really expected the apology anyway. Beside him, he could feel the tension in Schechter's body, and he couldn't help but wonder at the connection his grandsire had to the boy across the street. "He won't be back, then," he said after a moment. "Alex will be disappointed." "Alex? But which one?" Briar supposed he wasn't meant to know. Schechter did so love to dole information out, one piece at a time. "He's marked," Briar pointed out. "Only an idiot would meddle in that." "I would choose your words more carefully," Schechter remarked, flicking an irritated look Briar's way. "They can too easily be extended to the one who encouraged him to stay away." Briar took a moment to mull over his next question. "Who does he actually belong to?" It was easy enough to see that ownership was at issue. Schechter was willing to do a lot for the sake of his fledglings, especially one of his Alex's. But Briar was surprised to learn he'd go quite so far. "He belongs to a mesmerist," was all the answer he received. But it was enough for Briar to understand just who the boy was. Was it still stealing? Still an unimaginable offense, if the human in question had run away on his own? Should providing a safe haven, out of spite for another city leader, out of love for a child, carry the same taboo? Briar was suddenly reminded of the promise he'd made so long ago, and he stopped that line of thought in its tracks. He would not betray Schechter's trust by thinking about it any further. If there was to be a fight, he knew what side he'd be on, no matter what. "Why were you late?" The quick change in topic threw Briar for a moment, but he was grateful for something else to focus on. No matter how resolute he was, he still found his mind wanting to return to the debate. "Hunter," he replied. "One of the Toros, judging by the wrist tattoo. I'll have to tell Ray that his descendants are still causing trouble." "What a legacy," Schechter commented. The Briar knew he wasn't really paying attention. His eyes lingered across the street, where the boy had finally finished throwing things into his bag. He turned toward them then, locking his gaze with the elder dandies, looking almost helpless in his sorrow. Schechter turned away from the sight and swiftly moved back inside. The boy looked like he was going to cry all over again. The end. Versus you, versus me. As soon as we go right through, 30 seconds without a word. It was then that I knew for sure I wasn't gonna hear a word from you. And the road became the radio, and the sky all that beautiful tree. Just me, so as far as anyone can see, they'd be helpless not to agree. They're driving miles between us three. It was them versus you versus me.